You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, one of Wisconsin's oldest state parks is celebrating a major milestone this weekend. We'll learn more as we visit the banks of the Mississippi River. First, between now and the August 14th primary, Wisconsin Public Radio has invited candidates who are running in contested primaries for statewide office and congressional seats to join us for interviews on Central Time and the Morning Show. You'll be able to find all of those interviews at wisconsinvote.org. Today we talked to Randy Bryce. He's an iron worker, former union organizer, and a veteran. He's a Democrat running for a seat in the U.S. House of Representatives in Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District, which includes Janesville. I talked to him earlier today. Randy Bryce, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Well, if you had 30 seconds or so to make your pitch to voters in the 1st Congressional District, what would you tell them about your campaign?
Well, it's a people-powered campaign, and we've been able to bring together, it's pretty much a united Democratic effort. You know, we don't have Bernie people, we don't have Hillary people, it's all Randy people, and it's all about working people. We have over, you know, several hundreds of people, volunteers that have been coming up, really excited about now that we've repealed Paul Ryan, actually replacing him with a working person. And it's great to know that I have the support of my neighbors and co-workers, being a lifelong resident of the area, having served in the Army, and also understanding a little bit what it's like to struggle, having been diagnosed with cancer while working two full-time jobs and not being covered with insurance. Been very involved with labor activities and veteran issues as well in the state of Wisconsin, especially since Scott Walker was elected to office, and saw that it doesn't, you know, it's great to organize protests, to go and testify on behalf of legislation, but we need to get more working people elected to Congress. We have over, right now, Congress is made up, over half are millionaires and don't understand what it's like to struggle. So I'm looking forward to going and representing the hardworking people of Wisconsin's 1st District.
If you're elected, what would your key issues be in Congress?
Definitely at the top of the list is health care. I mean, again, having been diagnosed with cancer and not having insurance, I know how it can really put somebody into the hole. And not only that, but my mom has MS, my dad has Alzheimer's, and it's an issue that's always being brought up on the campaign trail, people not being able to afford their medications or even just see a doctor. And when the choice is to either buy groceries for food or to go get something medically taken care of, that shouldn't be a choice that people have to worry about.
They've pointed toward your personal story a fair amount in your campaign. People have pointed toward some issues where you've taken heat in the past. You've had arrests, including marijuana possession, drunken driving. People point to issues stemming from back child support. These are all in the public now. What do you tell people about that?
Well, I had 20 years ago, I did receive an OUI, and it was, you know, early on in my ironworking career. I was an apprentice. Had a job in the UP, and I take full responsibility for that. You know, I had too many beers, got behind the wheel. And when I went to get that taken care of, I didn't hire an attorney. I told the magistrate I did something wrong. I'm here to accept my punishment and make things right. Again, that was 20 years ago. I'm not the same person I was 20 years ago. And as far as with working with my with the child support, it's you know, there were times when it was hard. I got laid off in the winter, and as when you're working outdoors to make a living, there's not always work available, especially in a cold Wisconsin winter. No, new jobs aren't starting up. So I'm grateful that I was able to work with my ex-wife, my son's mother. She knew what was going on, and we worked together. We put our son first, and she even wrote a statement asking that people not make it into a political issue because she never made it a complaint. We always, you know, our son always had what he needed. We have a fantastic relationship to this day. But I do understand struggles that working people face. And that gives me more credibility to go and fight for people that also have to face these issues. It's, you know, I'm not getting money from like Big Pharma or Wall Street that want something in return. This is people giving, we've been able to bring in over $6 million and average contribution has been like $25 a person. People know that I'm going to stand up for them because I know what it's like and how hard it is to make it these days.
Now, you started your campaign as a challenger to House Speaker Paul Ryan. He has represented the district for nearly 20 years. How do you think he has served the people in the district?
Well, you know, he started off nice enough guy, promising to protect Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, which are issues that really were important to the people here. It used to be a manufacturing center when he first started. Since then, we've lost several manufacturing plants. A big GM plant in his backyard at Janesville is under demolition right now. We had an American Motors plant in Kenosha. That's gone as well. And even up Mill Creek, Delphi left. And just most recently, we saw where he was headed. He was giving $1.5 trillion to people that don't need $1.5 trillion. And then the next week, you know, next week we see that he wants to go after Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. Started off as a nice guy, but, you know, nobody has done more to attack those programs since he's been in than Paul Ryan. And he wants whoever follows him to continue in his footsteps. And we can't allow that to happen. These are issues that are too important to the hardworking people of First District.
Talking to Randy Bryce about his campaign to represent Wisconsin's first congressional district. He's in the Democratic primary. What are some of the issues in that district? What are things that are coming out of that part of Wisconsin that you think may be overlooked in national politics on the national stage?
Well, one of the big things is good paying jobs. And because of all the really good auto worker jobs that are left, you know, Governor Walker is trying to sell his low unemployment rate. But the fact is the reason people have a lot of jobs here is because you need two or three just to get by. We're hardworking people, and, you know, with the job outlook not being that great, and the attacks on education, too, we need a lot more to be hopeful about, which is why I think you're seeing this great enthusiasm in the First District to make a change and have somebody, you know, that understands what's going on and what it's like to have to struggle to keep a roof over your head to get elected.
So what kind of changes would you like to see in federal policy that would help with job creation, not just job creation, as you're saying, but better paying jobs?
Well, I mean, one of my main issues is health care, and that's why I'm in favor of Medicare for All, because not only is it the right thing to do to allow people to stay healthy, you can't work unless you're healthy, but also we just saw that there was a Koch brother report that said, you know, admitted that we're going to save money by going to a Medicare for All problem. And also it's the right thing to do from an economic standpoint, because small businesses now, I've talked to some people that want to start their own business, and health care is an issue that, you know, right now it's kind of in limbo. But if we had some kind of Medicare for All, that would be one less huge hurdle that somebody that wants to start up a business would have to deal with. As well as we had an entire GE plant pick up and move the entire factory from Waukesha to Canada. And Paul Ryan stated it had something to do with the tax rate. But if you look at the big picture, it's, you know, what does Canada have that we don't have? And they have a universal type of health care, and that's something that we don't have.
Now, that report you referenced says, you know, comparing the costs of that Medicare for All plan to what we're paying in the whole medical system, there would be those savings, but that would be a lot more money flowing through the federal government. It would be a huge outlay, a big change in the tax system to be required to support that. Do you think the American people can get behind that?
Oh, absolutely. When it's explained to them, right now we're paying, we're paying for insurance that we can't afford to use. And I'm hearing people, and I've done this in the past, too, where it's like, you know, you get through 8 months out of the year without needing to go see a doctor. And then it was like, well, is it important enough to go now or, you know, to fulfill our deductible? Or can we wait till the end of the year and start new? You know, deductibles are one thing, too. And the thing is that we're going to have to pay for people's health insurance who aren't covered. We're doing that now with higher premiums. So I think it just makes so much more sense to let people get covered now so you can go see a doctor, get regular checkups, get in the mindset of seeing a doctor at least annually so you can find a problem before it gets to be too big. Because if you can't afford to see a doctor now, you're not going to be able to afford the extra charges when you have to go be admitted into the emergency room with the extra fees for that taking place.
I want to spend a few moments on an issue big in national politics. You feature it on your campaign website, immigration. What are some of your key points on immigration issues?
Well, number one, we need to have a Clean Dream Act. because we were promised. Congress, this is something that's a bipartisan issue that Republicans and Democrats agree that we need to take care of the Dreamers. I'm also in favor of DAPA, which is taking care of their parents, to make sure that we have a streamlined means of getting documentation. These are hardworking people that are already in the country. And, you know, especially in the Dreamers, when it comes to them, this is the only country they've ever lived in. They were brought here with no choice of their own. And now, you know, you need to be in the program. You have to have a clean police record. And you need to either be working or attending school full time. That's something that's extremely important. I've also come out in favor of abolishing ICE. And, you know, that's something that even ICE members have. There were 19 ICE officers that stated, you know, we're not being used the way we should be under President Trump. And to have a personal deportation force is just unacceptable in my eyes. And especially so when you're talking to the immigrant community and you mention the word ICE and just see the fear in children's eyes. ICE just took away a member of the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce in Racine. He was coming back. His crime is coming back from his home at 3 a.m. We're visiting his mom at 3 a.m. ICE picked him up, and now there's a press conference. I think it already took place. But we're going to have, you know, a rally tomorrow night as well in support of him. He has a family, I think, like 7 children. But he's been an asset to the community. And to have ICE pick him up for not committing any crime, that's unacceptable.
And we'll leave it there for now. Randy Bryce, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Have a fantastic day.
Randy Bryce is running as a Democrat for a seat in the U.S. House of Representatives in Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District, which includes Janesville. Janesville school board member Kathy Myers is also running. She'll join us this time tomorrow. Between now and the August 14th primary, candidates who are running in contested primaries have the opportunity to join us for interviews on Central Time and The Morning Show. Find all of those interviews at wisconsinvote.org. First, one of Wisconsin's oldest state parks is about to celebrate a big milestone. A centennial celebration is planned this weekend for Perot State Park in Trempealeau, which became Wisconsin's 5th state park in 1918. Lois Larson is superintendent of Perot State Park. She joins us now to talk more about the history of the park and what's on tap for the celebrations this weekend. Lois, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Rob, and thank you for inviting me on your show today.
Well, you're up close there at the park. For people who haven't been to Perot, what makes it special in your eyes?
Perot is 1,200 acres of beautiful parkland that goes from the Mississippi River all the way up to the Blufflands. So you can walk along the trail and you can get up on top of the bluffs and get a beautiful view of the whole Mississippi River Valley.
And as we mentioned, you're celebrating 100 years of history at the park, but the history of the area goes back way further. Can you tell us a little bit about the history of what became Perot State Park?
Perot State Park was a part of a donation from John Latch, a businessman out of Winona, who wanted to preserve land in this area for everyone to use and recreate on. So he initially gave 880 acres to the state of Wisconsin to create a state park, and he wanted it specifically named after Nicolas Perot, who is a historical figure in this area as a French fur trader who came into this area in the 1600s to set up trading with the local tribes.
And there's a lot of rich history, French traders there, and tribal history as well. There are mounds, I understand, at the park?
Yes, we do. We've got, as a part of the various cultures who have lived here for the past 13,000 years, we do have a deer effigy mound. We also have a wolf effigy mound and a lot of conical mounds through the effigy cultures as well as the Hopewell culture.
So the mounds there clearly, and I think I read that a railroad company back in the day had found evidence of some of the early French traders there, some archaeological evidence?
Yes, they did. We listed as Perot Post, which was an area that was at one point where Nicolas Perot actually set up a fur trade and started to work in this area. And it was impacted by the railroad that went through and also by the lock and dam system that came through. So areas of that place were flooded, but they did find great archaeological evidence, including what they considered to be the post that was set up after Nicolas Perot came here.
A lot of the amenities at our state parks in Wisconsin date back to the Civilian Conservation Corps back in the Great Depression era. Can you talk about the impact they had on Perot State Park?
Definitely. We had a camp that was stationed here at Perot, the 2606 Company, and they were here from the summer of 1935 until 1937, and in those 18 months, they did a lot of work here at the park. They created a lot of the trails that we see here and people can still enjoy today. They also created a shelter building on top of Brady's Bluff, which is a great vantage point to see the whole Mississippi River.
So how else has the park changed over the last 100 years?
Well, we've increased the infrastructure of the park. We created additional campsites, so we have 104 campsites in the park. We added additional trails, which take us to 15 miles of hiking trails, cross-country ski trails, snowshoe trails. And we also are right on the Mississippi, so we do provide rentals through our friends group for canoes and kayaks so people can actually get out on the water, enjoy Trempealeau Bay, and also look up and enjoy the bluffs in the park.
And you're on the confluence of the Mississippi and Trempealeau, is that right?
Yep, the Trempealeau River empties right into the Mississippi here in the park. So there's great fishing in this area to access, and paddling is great out on the water.
Talking to Lois Larson, superintendent of Perot State Park in Trempealeau. It's the 100th anniversary of the park, some celebrations coming up, and we're talking about the past, present, and future of that state park. Lois, talk a little bit about the celebrations going on this weekend for the 100-year anniversary.
Right. We will be having a great celebration on this coming Saturday. It starts at 10 o'clock. We're going to have some official presentation with a few speakers, and then we'll move into a really nice program with a lot of different presenters. We're going to have a variety of groups that are going to be here to discuss history, to talk about recreation, and some local artists who will be using wood, natural materials. We also have a very special a product that the Friends Group created for the centennial. It's a coloring book. And we actually have the local artist who created the drawings for that coloring book who's going to be on site here, and so you can come color with her and create your own masterpiece and learn about the park history as you go.
Now, if we stop by to check out the festivities, is there one must-see thing at Perot State Park? Like, if you go there, you better see this.
The one thing you better see is Trempealeau Mountain, and you can see that either from the base of Trempealeau, of Brady's Bluff. So you can either do that right from the Nature Center, see Trempealeau Bay, Trempealeau Mountain, and then you can hike way to the top of Brady's Bluff, and then you get another view of that mountain. It's a very sacred site. It was a navigational point of the Upper Mississippi River, and it's sacred to the Native peoples in this area.
And at Trempealeau Mountain, it's actually the feature that the French gave it that name, and that's what gave the town of Trempealeau its name, right?
That's exactly right. They took wording from the local tribes, which is foot soaking in water, put that into French, which included the word Trempealeau. I don't pronounce it very well. And then Trempealeau, the village of Trempealeau, also used that in order to call their name, and also the county of Trempealeau.
Take us through the seasons at Perot State Park. What are some of the highlights as the year goes by?
In the winter, we provide cross-country skiing. We have snowshoeing. It's a quieter time. You get a chance to see the whole landscape of the park without the leaves on the trees. You get to see the bluffs. You get to see the river in a really neat time of the year. We move into spring, and that's when we get bird migration. We get a lot of birds flying up the Mississippi Flyway, heading to their summer grounds, and we get tundra swans. We get trumpeter swans. We get a lot of ducks. We get warblers, a lot of really cool birds coming through the area. Spring wildflowers. Then we move into summer. Summer is really all about camping, hiking, using the park, getting out on the water. Very busy time of year for us. But it's a large enough park that you can still find all those real intimate areas where you can enjoy the park on your own. As we move into the fall, everybody knows about fall colors. Here at Perot, our colors are a little bit later. So they're oaks and hickories. So they're not the bright maples, but they are really cool colors. And you can enjoy those in October and November.
I know parks around the state are dealing with a variety of challenges, including, in many cases, invasive species. What are some of the things you're working on there or watching out for there at the park?
We do a lot with garlic mustard, buckthorn, and black locust. Those are the kind of three key ones that we work with. We do have two state natural areas within the park, both on Brady's Bluff and Trumplo Mountain. And so we work with other staff within the agency to help control invasives and to better improve those natural areas as well as other parts of the park.
And are there ways for the public to get involved, whether it's with invasives or other projects at Pearl?
We always invite volunteers to come help us out with whatever their skill level and interests are. We do have the Friends of Pearl, which is a nonprofit friends group that supports the park. They were founded in 1980, and they continue to this day providing lots of volunteer opportunities. They provide canoe and kayak rentals, and the funding that they get out of their concessions actually goes back into the park and back into funding a naturalist position within the park.
And just briefly, if people are planning a trip out there, what else can they check out in the area?
We do have right next door, one of our neighbors is the Trumplo National Wildlife Refuge, and they've got a great facility over there with beautiful prairies that they've managed and maintained. We've got lots of canoe and kayak areas, and a lot of local businesses. The Village of Trumplo is a really cool place to visit. Lots of little shops and little things, a little traditional river town downtown. So that's a nice area. And we're very close to both La Crosse and even Winona across the river for if you want a bigger town and bigger experiences.
Lois, thanks a lot for joining us today.
All right. Thank you. I really appreciate it. Have a good day and hope to see everybody at the event on Saturday.
Lois Larson is superintendent of Pearl State Park in Trumplo. She joins us to talk about the park's history and its upcoming centennial celebration this weekend. Now, Wisconsin Public Radio has invited candidates who are running in contested primaries for statewide office and congressional seats to join us for interviews here on Central Time and on The Morning Show. You'll be able to find all of those interviews at wisconsinvote.org. Today, we continue our interviews with candidates for governor. There's a contested primary for Republicans and for Democrats. Today, we talked to attorney Matt Flynn, who's running in the Democratic primary. Matt Flynn, thanks for joining us today.
Good to be with you.
Let's start off with what we're asking all the candidates. You've got the length of an elevator ride to tell someone why you're running for governor of Wisconsin. What do you tell them?
Very simply, I am not going to stand by and watch our democracy destroyed. I'm a Navy veteran. Donald Trump has betrayed us to the Russians for bribery and blackmail. He's been described as the tip of the spear of Russian military intelligence. And the Senate and the House can't stand up to him, but strong Democratic governors will. And Scott Walker's betrayed us to his donors. He's a policy mule for the Republican donor cartel, made us into a water colony for corporate pollution and a labor colony for union busting and reducing wages. Both Walker and Trump are running governments that are beyond a liberal democracy, and I want them out, and I'm going to do something about Walker.
Looking at your background with the Democratic Party as an attorney, as you mentioned, a U.S. Navy veteran, how do you see your background helping you as governor of Wisconsin?
Well, it helps me in a variety of ways. First of all, I'm the only veteran in the race in the Democratic primary, and I've gotten good support from fellow veterans around the state. The second thing is a former party chairman. I've unified our party before, and I will unify the state. On the ship I was on, we had sailors from Alabama and Mississippi and from California and New York and Wisconsin, and there was no north-south divide. There was no urban-rural divide. We were shipmates, and I look on everyone in the state as my shipmate. I will bring us together.
As an attorney, you represented the Milwaukee Diocese of the Catholic Church for a number of years when the sex abuse scandal was at its peak. Now, several of people in the Democratic Party, some of your opponents, Governor Walker, advocates for people abused by priests, have called on you to drop out of the race, citing your work for your client on those cases. How do you respond to that?
Well, I'm proud of the work. I'm proud of having represented the Archdiocese of Milwaukee. I did not represent any of the priests that had done these criminal things. As far as I'm concerned, they were criminals and should go to prison. But I was brought in to clean it up. First of all, to enter into fair settlements with victims for compensation and therapy so they could get on with their lives. I mean, I couldn't go back in time and undo the terrible things that occurred, but I could treat them with dignity and respect and make sure that they were able to go forward. And then secondly, I was part of a team that put into effect procedures so it would never happen again. There would never again be a transfer of an abusive priest, and there would be immediate reporting to the police, and I was not involved in any of the transfers that had occurred. I'm very proud of what I did. You have to understand something. Plaintiff's lawyers are really percentage lawyers, and when they came in, They demanded, in effect, virtually all of the, what could have amounted individually to all of the resources of the Archdiocese. The Archdiocese has hospitals, schools, refugee resettlement centers, homeless shelters, soup kitchens, Catholic charities, and they had funding had to be maintained. And so we entered into very fair settlements. And I just reject calls. I mean, part of it is sort of an identity politics elite in the Democratic Party that likes to control nominations before elections. And part of it is just people who are self-interested. They're supporting another candidate and so forth, and they seize on this. But this is America. I mean, people are entitled to defense. The most terrible people in society are entitled to a defense. And unless you're prepared to say that a public defender can never run for judge because he represented murderers, this is America. In China and Russia, you don't get a lawyer. But that's what's good about our country.
Talking to Matt Flynn about his campaign in the Democratic primary for governor of Wisconsin. Under Governor Walker, unemployment is at this record low in Wisconsin. Why should Wisconsinites make a change and vote for you or one of your fellow Democrats?
Well, it's not under Governor Walker. It's in spite of Governor Walker. Under George W. Bush, it was up to almost 10%, and it was the Democratic policies of the previous 8 years that brought it down. But the problem with Walker is, he's a wage killer. What the real issue is wages. There are a lot of people working for very low-wage jobs, part-time, several part-time jobs. What he has done is, at the behest of his donors, he's killed wages. He passed Right to Work. He passed Act 10, took away prevailing wage, froze the minimum wage. And his job is to squash wages so that the productivity increases from technology and industrious workers goes to corporations, investors, and bondholders. And I know that, and I'm not going to put up with it. I'm going to reverse Act 10, repeal Act 10, repeal Right to Work, put back in prevailing wage, raise the minimum wage, and get wages up in this state. And when you do that, we're going to clean up our water, put in a new DNR, we're going to make health care available, and most importantly, we're going to put money in education, in the University of Wisconsin system and public education, and we're going to restore our state to the greatness it enjoyed before Scott Walker darkened its door.
There are eight people, as you know, running as Democrats in this primary. How do you distinguish yourself from your seven opponents?
I'm the only veteran, and I think that experience and the support of veterans around the state is important. I'm the only one that has served as party chairman, and so I have contacts throughout the state. And more importantly, I've unified our party before, and you have to do that before you can unify the state. And most important, I have been a commercial litigation partner at Quarles & Brady for many years, and I'm the only candidate that has said that I will go to court to stop the Foxconn deal, rescind it, without any exposure to potential damages, and I've laid out a plan on how to do it. And most of the others say, well, it can't be done. It's a contract. It's an illegal contract. And illegal contracts are unenforceable in Wisconsin. And really, there's only one other candidate, Paul Soglin, who has agreed with me and said that it can be rescinded. But I've had much longer commercial litigation experience, and I've laid out how I'm going to do it.
Do you think, really, with litigation, you could stop the Foxconn project? They have lawyers as well. They could, I think, make a pretty compelling case that they have a done deal here.
Well, when you say they can make a compelling case they have a done deal, they managed to outwit, which is not difficult, Scott Walker, who didn't have the ability, the experience to even go into this deal. But there's two things you have to understand. One is, an illegal contract, an unconstitutional contract, is unenforceable in Wisconsin. Number two, this is illegal and unenforceable because it exempts one company, Foxconn, from three major laws of Wisconsin. It exempts them by description of them and only them from our wetlands laws, our environmental impact statement laws, and from the jurisdiction of our Court of Appeals, the only company in history that doesn't have to go through our Court of Appeals. That's called a private bill. You can't pass legislation that only benefits one person or one company. You can pass it by category, you can, and so on, but you can't pass a private bill. And in this particular case, I will go to court, and I will move to rescind it in front of a judge in federal court, and I expect that we're going to win.
How would you use state money and resources to try to attract businesses to Wisconsin, if not things like the Foxconn deal?
Right. So if we rescind the Foxconn deal, and I think we will, and we get our financial house in order. And we're going to do that by also repealing the manufacturer and agriculture exemption, which goes to mostly a few wealthy people. Get back the $1 billion that Walker turned down for Medicaid supplements of our money, and the $800 million of our money for train money, transportation money. What I would do is this. Great companies do not come to Wisconsin because they're going to be given money or bribed. They come here because they like honest government, clean water and a clean environment, where hunting and fishing and recreation are available for their employees, a strong public education system so that they have well-educated employees for their various jobs, and the children of their employees are going to have a good education, and a clean state. That's what we were up until Scott Walker. We used to be known for honest government, clean water, and high wages, and today we're known for corrupt government, dirty water, and low wages because of Scott Walker. I know how I've represented many of these companies, and they're very good people, and I know the good union companies, and I know what they want, and they don't want to be bribed like this Chinese company, Foxconn, by Scott Walker with a large amount of money for no apparent reason. What they want is a good infrastructure, good roads. I would use the money for public education, health care, and totally repairing the roads in the state.
We're talking to Matt Flynn, Democratic candidate in the primary for governor, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have for candidate Matt Flynn? Do you want to know where he stands on a particular issue? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Matt Flynn is with us. We're talking about his campaign in the Democratic primary for governor of Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What question do you have for Matt Flynn? What issue do you want to know his stance on? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Before we go to our callers, you mentioned increasing investment in education. Can you talk about your goals for Wisconsin's educational system?
Great. Well, first of all, Scott Walker has vandalized the UW system. The UW-Madison is one of the top 50 universities in the world. UW-Milwaukee is an R1 research institution, and all our other great campuses, Green Bay, Eau Claire, all of them, Whitewater, et cetera, Stevens Point. And Stevens Point now is going to give up its liberal arts department. I would greatly increase funding to the University of Wisconsin, and I would lower tuition by a lot. Tuition is way too high, but a lowering of tuition has to be fully funded. So I would put back in the over $1 billion that he took out of it to injure it. So that's what I would do, number one. I would restore statutory tenure to restore the prestige of the faculty, to attract the best graduate students and professors, reaffirm the mission statement. And for K-12, what I would do is I have renamed it pre-K-14. I would put more money into early education, early childhood, and I would also fully fund public education. What he did when he got in is he took out hundreds of millions of dollars, $1 billion, really. And then at election time, he slipped some in and says he's the education governor, which is, I thought, a joke from The Onion when I first heard it. But he's not the education governor. And I would also make tuition at our in-state public technical colleges and two-year colleges in the first 2 years of university tuition-free for in-state residents. They'd still have room and board to pay, and they'd still have fees and books. But I think that if we were to be, provide that tuition, that would keep a lot of high school graduates in the state. And finally, I mean, I'll say this. An educated citizenry is the greatest asset any state has, and I feel very strongly about that, and it takes money.
Let's go to our callers now. Jay is with us in O'Connell. Jay, hi.
Hi. Hey, Matt, my question is this. Why do we have to have corporate welfare to companies like Kimberly-Clark after they've had a huge tax cut? And also, most of that tax cut has gone back to dividends and buying back stock instead of helping the companies be more profitable by training workers and investing in new products.
Jay, thanks for the call. Jay, referring to the effort to keep Kimberly-Clark jobs, more of them here in the state with state incentives similar to the Foxconn deal. Where do you stand on that, Matt?
Right. That's exactly what's happened. Everybody in the state wants to be Foxconn now. Everybody wants to be Foxconn. Kimberly Clark came in, and what they've said is basically they were going to leave the state, and basically it's a tactic. The union made some more concessions, and my stand on it is this. I am not going to be Foxconn. In other words, I want Foxconn out itself in terms of at least giving them money. With any other in-state company who's here and has a legitimate need that I'm going to review, and I've practiced law in this area for a long time, I'm willing to sit down with anyone, and I'm not insensitive to what's going on. But if we're getting hosed, if we're getting scammed here, in other words, this is a squeeze play, okay, Foxconn got it, we want it, so we'll pretend to go out. I'm a hard negotiator. I'm not going to put up with it. So based on everything that I've seen and based on what the union concessions, I'm willing to sit down and talk with them. But I'm not willing to just, you know, write a blank check to these people. And I'm very, very sensitive to the fact that people will try to Foxconn us, and that's got to stop. That stops with me.
Back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Owen is on the line in Wyoega. Owen, hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. All right, candidate Flynn, is that correct, Flynn?
Right.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. So name recognition is low because I haven't heard much about you. So my question is this. As an attorney, what are you going to do to protect democracy? I'm a young beginning dairy farmer in the state of Wisconsin, trying to compete against large corporate-style firms that hire 90% of their labor is not eligible to vote because they're not U.S. citizens. What are we going to do to bring the voting-eligible citizen back into the agricultural communities and help democracy prevail instead of replacing our ability to work in a manner that is conducive to helping our dairy economy and our farming commodity?
Owen, thanks for the call. Owen, concerned about small farms, yep, and immigrant labor on larger farms.
Right, and democracy itself, and I agree with him. Owen, let me tell you this. The Republican Party has found a way to govern without getting a majority of the vote through gerrymandering, voter ID, the Russian hacking to scare everybody and everything else. They've even added us to the list of states who's called for a constitutional convention, and they're going to get 7 of 9 votes at that convention to amend our Constitution. They don't even have a majority of the votes of the state legislature. I don't mean in the legislature, but because of gerrymandering, they have a majority, and that's it. Here's a couple of things I would do. First of all, I will get rid of gerrymandering. I'll get rid of voter ID. I'll get rid of all these impediments to voting so that we have free American citizens voting and making their will express, not gerrymandered in these rotten districts. Number two, when it comes to dairy farms and the competition, part of it is the CAFOs, the concentrated animal feeding operations. I'm going to restore local control to every county. I think that the government of the county should really be the basic unit of the expression of a free people. And so what's going to happen is, if a county does not want a CAFO, they'll zone it out. And a lot of the geology of the state doesn't tolerate that level of manure and so on. But more importantly, the oversupply is squeezing out a lot of small family farms. And third, I'll tell you this about protecting our borders. The Democratic Party was the party of Truman, Roosevelt, and John F. Kennedy. We're strong on defense, strong on protecting our borders. And we've taken a wrong turn in the last number of years. And Donald Trump is a phony baloney. He is not really protecting anything. He's betrayed us to the Russians. It's time, in my view, for a strong Democratic governor to say, I'm strong on defense. I'm strong on protecting our borders. I do not want drug cartels, jihadists, and transnational gangs coming into this country. And I will keep them out. So I'm going to keep America for our own jobs. But as long as the Republican Party is in power, what they are doing, they found a way to govern, even though they didn't get the majority of the votes. And I'm going to stop that. I'm going to veto the next crooked reapportionment, put it into a federal court where we get fair lines, set up an Iowa-type commission of fair lines, and then let everybody go at it in a democracy, and the will of the people will prevail.
Talking to Democratic candidate for Governor Matt Flynn, running in the primary election, voting next month, August 14th. Back to your calls. Evie is with us in Delavan. Evie, hi. Evie, are you there? No, Evie, but Evie wanted to ask about your views on gun control, Matt.
Right. I'm a strong proponent of the Second Amendment. But as a military man, I also don't believe that military weapons should be in civilian hands. Nobody has a right or should have nuclear weapons, chemical biological weapons, shoulder-held missile launchers, and in my view, military assault rifles, because those are military weapons. You want to handle any of them, nuclear, you go in the Navy or the Air Force, missile launchers and military assault rifles, you go into the Army and the Marine Corps. So I will fight to the end to preserve Second Amendment rights to handguns, rifles, and shotguns. The people deserve to be armed, but they do not deserve to be armed, and they shouldn't be armed with military weapons.
Go next to David, calling from near Hayward. David, hi.
Mr. Flynn, what is your position on nonviolent or throwing our prisons and releasing them? And how would you deal with a law and order crowd that would, you know, attack an attitude like that?
Nonviolent prisoners in the prison population, Matt.
Right. I was the first person in this primary to come out for the full legalization of marijuana for medicinal, recreational, all purposes, tax and regulated for people over 21. If it's legal in Colorado, it should not be a crime here. The first day that I'm in office, I will start the pardoning of everybody in our prison systems who's in there for nonviolent possession offenses of marijuana and other substances. And the addictive issues, addiction, mental health, we have no business having that in the prisons. We spend more on prisons right now than on the University of Wisconsin system. I'm going to have the biggest pardon board in history, and I'm going to send out word to these cowboy judges around the state that like to give long sentences and crack down on nonviolent people and say this. You convict them at 10 in the morning. I will pardon them by 2 in the afternoon. Do not waste my time. The Republicans can't take the pardon power away from me. And if they insist on enforcing some of these laws and making them criminal, I will pardon people. I will reduce the population of the prisons in this state by a lot. I want to put an end to mass incarceration. Prisons are for violent people, rapists, murders, that kind of thing. They're not there for possession offenses.
Thanks for that call. And Matt Flynn, we'll leave it there for now. Thanks for joining us today.
It was a great thing. Thank you very much, Rob. Enjoyed it.
That's Matt Flynn running for governor as a Democrat. Political activist Mike McCabe, who's also running as a Democrat, will join us at this time tomorrow. Profiles of all the Democratic and Republican candidates for governor can be found at WPR.org/governor. Between now and the August 14th primary, we've invited candidates in contested primaries to join us for interviews here on Central Time and on The Morning Show. You can find all of those interviews. They'll be loaded up at WisconsinVote.org.